Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to another episode of College Hockey Talk. Before we get into this episode, I just want to provide some clarification. We initially were going to release this episode 2 weeks ago. Obviously, since then, Tara got hired to become the new Boston University women's hockey head coach. Firstly, I would like to congratulate Tara on getting hired. It's a well-deserved honor for her. However, because of this, we had to record two separate interviews with Tara so we could provide this episode with as much updated information as possible. So in the 14-minute mark, there will be a transition to the original conversation that we had with Tara. I hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as I did, and thank you so much for listening, and make sure to follow College Hockey Talk on social media, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Enjoy. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of College Hockey Talk. On today's episode of the podcast, I'm joined by the head coach of the BU women's hockey team, Tara Watchhorn. Tara, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, and how's everything going?
Thanks for having me. Things are going good. It's been a little bit of a whirlwind here the past couple of weeks, but it's been awesome to be able to return to my alma mater.
Yeah, no, you've been everywhere. You've been in Boston, Tampa, and Canada, I've noticed. So what's the last couple of weeks been like? Not just like from the hockey perspective, but just going back and forth to all these different places.
Yeah, it was really cool. I think once I was hired, you know, right away, our administration was, you know, let's go to Tampa, right? Our men's team had such an amazing season, and it's hard to say no. You know, hockey at BU is the big sport, and to see all the support and the people that came out in Tampa for the men's team and getting to kind of reintegrate myself into that world and see a lot of alumni and people, it was a really cool experience. And then, you know, the springtime's a big time for recruiting. So there is no time. Obviously, there was a lot of big tournaments up in Toronto between the women's worlds and provincials. So was able to put that on the schedule too. And a little quick trip to pop home to see the family as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And hopefully some future Terriers will be coming back in the next few years from that trip. What was Tampa like? It looked like they did an amazing job hosting the Frozen Four from watching on TV. I heard it was like the second most attended Frozen Four as well. What was it like being there?
It's really cool, honestly. And that was my first time ever going. I know this is, I think, the second time in the recent history that Tampa has hosted. And everyone has just said like how exciting it is in the city. Branding everywhere and marketing, it's the big ticket in town. And I think, you know, you have to think that the Tampa Bay Lightning have really elevated excitement for hockey in the area, but I've heard nothing but good things. It was great to be a part of it. It was the big thing to do.
Yeah, I was at the Frozen Four last year in Boston, and that was a lot of fun. And hopefully, I know we talk about this in the interview, but hopefully the women's Frozen Four will start to move to those type of arenas at some point in the future.
I think that'd be really cool, no doubt.
Now, like I mentioned, you were recently hired as the BU women's hockey head coach. Just talk a little bit about the hiring process and why did you choose to come back to your alma mater and become the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's a loaded question. Obviously, my time at Stonehill, I cherish so much, and being able to build that program. It's tough to think about leaving. It was really tough. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it's my alma mater. It's Boston University. I fell in love with this school and this city when I was 17 years old. And I got to, you know, be a part of helping grow this program from really early on in the history. And I got to return as an assistant coach. And it was something that I had to look into. I had to at least explore. It was a little bit earlier than maybe I thought would ever happen. But I got to dive in and start to have some conversations with the administration and to see, you know, where they wanted the future of the program to go. And just like when I went through the process with Stonehill, I truly feel like you need to have alignment, right? And I feel like they believed in me and my vision for the program and, you know, so excited to come back and hopefully continue to help the program have success.
Yeah. Is it going to be different? Like, obviously, when you started at Stonehill, you were building a program from scratch. Now, this is a little bit different. You're obviously building a program, but there's some history behind it. What's the difference going to be like building a program like BU versus Stonehill?
Yeah, that's the first thing that I have reflected on. It's going to be so different and a completely new challenge. I think the challenges of building from scratch and the challenges of coming in on a, you know, a moving ship, if you will, are completely different. And, you know, one of the first things I said to the girls, because I have the senior class, the rising seniors I coached, but when I was an assistant, when they were freshmen, I recruited some of the girls that came in. And then there's a handful of them that I haven't, you know, met. So what I told them was, this is a, you know, a reset and a fresh start for everyone. I like to think, you know, you can think that I grew in 2 years, and I give them the same benefit of the doubt. So it is a fresh start, but at the same time, my, you know, my mentality here is to just get in, integrate myself into the team and ask a lot of questions and try to get a sense of where the program's at first. I don't think you can truly move forward until you get an idea of where it's at. So just going to come and, you know, have big ears and try to get a sense of where we're at and come up with a plan to move forward.
Yeah. What's it been like getting to know the team, and talk about the transitioning schools, I guess, a little bit. And what's it been like this off season? Like, what are your plans, I guess, as a coach this off season before the season begins in September or early October?
Yeah, just got in there, started working out with the girls and getting a sense. We have a great, great support staff here with our strength conditioning and athletic training. So just getting a sense there and working out with them. We've had a few skill sessions just to get comfortable on the ice together. But for the most part, like I said, it's really just trying to get a sense of where we're at and come up with the plan for the next season. We have some individual meetings here over the next couple of weeks, and just, it all comes down to just building relationships. And I think being patient is going to be important as we move forward.
Yeah. What can fans expect from the team next season as you, as the head coach? Cause I'm assuming you're a little bit different than Coach DeRosa. So is there any like X's and O's things that might be a little bit different watching BU this year compared to years in the past?
Well, I think what's really exciting about this team is that I really feel like the pieces are there to have a lot of success. It's such a talented group that a lot of diversity and skill and experience. Excited about the class coming in. And I think the biggest thing for me, if I'm doing my job right and my philosophy in coaching, is that you're just going to see good habits. You're going to see team speed, team transition, but great attention to detail on defense. And that really like attack style defensive game where we're not giving the opponent time and space. And to me, that always leads to offense. So hopefully a lot of, you know, excitement to come next season. But that's all, if I'm doing my job right, I like to think that that's going to be what you see out there.
And obviously, Hockey East is going to be sort of an interesting landscape next season. Northeastern's losing a lot of key players, along with BC and a few other teams. Where do you think BU fits in the whole Hockey East mix, since it's going to be a little bit different, I think, this next season compared to last few years?
Yeah, I think everyone in Hockey East is looking at, you know, Alina Mueller finally graduating for a lot of the other teams. And so I think, yeah, I think it's so deep. I think every team has a chance to be competitive. I'm hopeful that we can too. It's an exciting time in Hockey East, and I think there's a lot of opportunity there to have success.
Now, who are some of the new players that you're bringing in next season, if you're allowed to say? And have you finalized any of your non-conference games yet? I always like to ask this, even if you can't say it yet.
Yeah, I might have to say keep an eye out in the future. We're finalizing everything. I can tell you, I feel really excited about where the program's going. I think one thing that we can say is that the Bean Pop Finals at TD Garden. So that's one thing I think that is public and an exciting little change and wrinkle to the schedule. But other than that, we'll be coming out soon with more of those details.
Is the semifinals still going to be played at the on-campus rinks?
Yeah, from my understanding, yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And obviously, talk about the strengths of your team for next year, player-wise, and just a little bit about the returning players on the roster and what you see from those players, even the ones that you haven't coached or recruited.
Yeah, I think the really cool thing is we're going to have a veteran D corps. A lot of those, the D actually that I coached when they were freshmen, they're now rising seniors. And I think that experience is going to lend itself well to our group. I think we have a lot of size and strength and the ability to really play strong defensively. We have a rising junior goaltender in Callie Shanahan, who has a lot of great experience there and will be solid for us. So I'm really excited. I really do think that we have a lot of skill and the ability to, you know, put points on the board and to play and be competitive in Hockey East. So hopeful for the future.
And talk a little bit about your leadership on your team. Obviously the captains haven't been announced yet, but have you met with them, and what's it going to be like trying to build your type of culture at BU? Cause we talked about the culture that you want to build at Stonehill. I guess, is it going to be sort of the same thing as Stonehill with the culture that you're building? And just talk a little about, I guess, the leadership that you have on your team this year.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I did was meet with the, you know, the current leadership group. I think our individual meetings next week are going to give us some more information as well. But I think you got to start there. You know, we have to build those relationships and to really build that trust with the leadership group so that it, you know, it ripples down to the rest of the team. But with regards to culture, it's going to be different, right? Because it's a different group of people. And that's what makes this job and team sports so dynamic and fun. But for me, what will always be consistent is having high standards for ourselves on and off the ice. And that's something that I'm passionate about. I'm excited to work with the group to really define what that means here at BU. But it is, it's attention to detail and who we are, how we treat each other, and how we carry ourselves. And I think if you do that off the ice as much as we do it on the ice, we're going to have a good thing going.
Now, it's no secret that it's been almost 4 years since BU Women's Hockey last won a hockey's playoff game. What are some of the challenges that you think the program has to overcome in order to have more success on the ice and get back to where the program used to be, competing to win hockey's championships, but also making national tournament appearances as well?
Yeah, I think the cool thing is that, you know, when you lose, you learn what it feels like, right? And it makes winning that much sweeter. And I think, like I said, that we have pieces in place here to have some success. But I really think the big thing is that attention to detail, you know, and it's just getting the group working in the same direction. It's interesting, you know, I alluded to how I was a part of this program as a player when it was really young in its history. I was a part of the very first hockey's championship and Frozen Four run. And it's been interesting to hear how people talk about BU since then, how it's, you know, elevated to one of those big hockey schools and a school that a lot of players want to go to. And I think we have to shift our mindset, you know, that putting this jersey on doesn't mean that we win just because the team has had, you know, success in the past. I think that everyone that now comes through this program has to think about how we're going to contribute to it and take ownership over how they impact the environment and the team and the success that we want to have.
Now, you mentioned how your decor is really experienced and have a really solid goalie in Callie Shanahan. The forward group, I think, is really interesting because we have a lot of talented players. I'm just looking through the stat sheet right now. Christina Vogt had a really good year with 19 points. Lacey Martin had a good year with 18 points. And Catherine Fulham had 17 points last year as well. What do you want to see from your forward group next year to even have better seasons and hopefully take a next step and develop as they're coming into their junior and senior years?
Yeah, like we were saying, I mean, so much skill up front too. And one thing I think that's just really going to help us, it comes back to that puck management, right? At the first half of your shift, you're looking to go out there and have an impact and be creative. And then the second half, we're leaving the game in a better place. And I think if we continue, like we start to roll lines back to back and create momentum and sustain momentum, I think that's just going to allow our skill set up front to generate even more.
And then last question I have for you is any message to any of the BU fans that are listening to this podcast? If the floor is all yours.
Just so excited to get going next year. Just keep coming out to support the team. You know, it's BU, it's hockey through and through here. Excited to hopefully give you some more, you know, exciting games to watch and looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. It should be exciting. I can't wait to go to one of your games in person next season. I'm looking forward actually to the Holy Cross game because you versus Coach LaChapelle, Brian DeRochers, two assistant. That's going to be a really cool game for him and for a lot of BU hockey fans as well.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of things coming full circle. It's a lot of fun.
Here is the transition to the original interview.
How do you try to find a person that fits in your culture? Because I remember listening to an interview with Merrimack's men's hockey coach, and he was saying, talent's everywhere. You can always find talent. You have the internet. It's all over the place. It's really trying to find the right person that fits in your locker room because he thinks success starts in the room. I'm curious from what your perspective is on that, and how do you try to find the right people for your program so that team chemistry can grow throughout the season, but you also have good people off the ice as well, because you want to see people. You want to coach players that you want to interact with every day.
100%. And, you know, I don't know if there's a true way of really knowing, right? Like, you do your best through the recruiting process. And I think ultimately it comes down to trusting your gut. But, you know, for me, it's just trying to have those conversations beyond the, you know, the bare minimum, right? And I think you want players that, A, fall in love with the school as much as they do the hockey program, because it creates that holistic experience. And I think it's huge for their happiness and well-being. But getting an understanding of what they're looking for out of college hockey, I think, is huge. I think you want different personalities. You know, I think you don't want the same type of player and same type of personality. It's that diversity that really adds to the locker room and allows them to learn from each other. And then meeting the families. I think that also kind of helps paint a full picture. And, you know, they're a part of it too. They're a part of that culture. We like to have our families be close and travel in packs on the road and that kind of thing. So you try to do your due diligence as much as you can, but then you just got to trust your gut.
And obviously you had a brand new team this year. I assume most of the players never even played with each other up until that point. So how'd you try to build that chemistry throughout the season and get that culture that you were looking for?
Yeah, we just finished doing our individual meetings and we've kind of laughed as a staff and players. It was unique. You know, I think the cool part about having everyone be new and everyone wanting to take a chance on this new program is that we all had that in common, right? Everyone came in and they wanted to be a part of building something special. And I think that bond unites you past a lot of adversity. But the reality is there is no way that we were going to put 18 freshmen, 4 transfers, 22 new players in one room and just expect that that culture was going to snap into place right away. And so we laughed. You know, what we learned was you got to be patient. You know, building relationships takes time, but having really high standards for our norms and behaviors, because we have to create a safe environment where everyone can come in and feel respected and valued, and then the relationships will grow from there. But, you know, I think what I really feel passionate about, especially after year one, is that it's not about having a perfect environment or perfect culture. It's about how you respond to each moment of growth that, you know, presents itself. And I think that over time is what is going to allow us to build that culture and manufacture the legacy that we want.
Yeah, that's sort of something unique that you had to face, because a lot of coaches usually have those seniors that have been with each other for such a long time. So those freshmen that come in can sort of lean on those players to help know what the culture is like that you already built. But for your case, you pretty much had to build the culture all in this year, and sort of hopefully those players now sort of know what it's like. And once those new players come in for the following season, it's just going to be something that comes natural. It's not going to be something that you have to keep working on throughout a year.
For sure. And I think it will provide new challenges, right? I think, you know, the girls have a little bit of protectiveness over this thing that they've built. So I think, you know, making sure we bring the new ones into the fold is very important. But to that point, I'm happy you mentioned that, because that was another strategy that we used. You know, we had 4 transfers who, you know, a lot of them were still younger. We had 1 grad transfer. But I think that the biggest thing was really, really investing time with them. And the hope was, as a staff, if we invested in our leadership group, that ripple effect would happen. So I think that was something that you can't control everything. That team isn't going to snap into place, you know, right away. But that was another strategy that we really used as a coaching staff, is to try to build that relationship with our leadership group very strong as fast as we could. So to hope that would kind of ripple out.
So I want to start off talking about the beginning of your hockey career and sort of work all the way up to where you are today. So you're from Newcastle, Ontario. So talk about growing up there and how did you start playing hockey?
Yeah, Newcastle, Ontario, I always call it the little secret slice of heaven. It's just a small town off the 401, about hour and a bit outside of Toronto, right on Lake Ontario. And, you know, I really felt like it was a cool, cool community to grow up in. You know, it's a small town. I grew up playing with the boys, playing down the street. And it was a great, safe community where I got to thrive and you know, really work hard. And from there, I ended up getting to go on. I played boys hockey for a while there, probably until Pee Wee, and then, you know, transitioned over to girls hockey after that. But I really do feel like getting to grow up in a town like that was a great foundation for me moving forward.
Who was your favorite player growing up? I'm assuming it was someone on the Toronto Maple Leafs, if I had a guess.
I am a Leafs fan, but I will say I was a little, you know, unique growing up. One of my favorite D was actually Adam Foote. And then another one I really liked watching was Scott Niedermeyer. And, you know, I'd be remiss to say if, you know, you look at that Canadian national team, and I think a lot of role models there too, from, you know, Carolyn Ouellette, Haley Wickenheiser, Jana Hefford, all women that paved the way for all of us.
Yeah. Scott Niedermeyer, I've heard he's like one of the hardest workers in the NHL, but he like never broke a sweat. That was what all his former teammates used to say about him.
Yeah, that skating efficiency was fun to watch.
Now, before college hockey, you played for the Durham West Junior Lightning. How'd you get the opportunity to go to that team, and what was your experience like there?
Yeah, you know, I feel very fortunate. If you think about women's hockey, it's not that old, right? The first World Championships was 1990s. I mean, that was the year I was born. But I was very fortunate that it was kind of taking off as I was going through my junior career and, you know, my playing career. And if you look at, you know, Ontario is one of the best places I feel that you can grow up and play. You know, there's a lot of teams and great leagues to play in. And at the time, Durham West, about 30 minutes from where I'm from, was probably the biggest girls center that you could play for. Like Whitby and some of the ones outside of that were less developed at the time, which are now great programs. So for me, it was just going to the closest place that I could play and be competitive. I really, really feel fortunate it worked out. I mean, you talk about I got to play with the likes of Natalie Spooner, Jen Wakefield in minor hockey. And you know, I really, really think about that and having women that, you know, really could push you and create that competitive environment.
What's your best memory from your junior hockey days when you look back on it now?
We got to win provincials. That was a little bit when I was younger. But honestly, it was just playing at that level. It was playing with Spoons and it was playing with Wake and, you know, women that are lifelong friends of mine now and really getting to chase our dreams together, I think would be the cool part.
You then went on to play for Boston University. Talk about your experience there as a player and what you took away from it, because obviously you won some hockey championships. You made some national championship games as well. So it felt like you were sort of in that core best years of BU when you look back on that women's hockey history.
Yeah, really cool to think about. Obviously, it's a program now that's created a name for itself. And what's so unique, obviously, starting a program at Stonehill is, you know, BU, when I was going through the recruiting process, was only 3-4 years into the history of the women's program. And to be honest, the same way that excited me at Stonehill, that excited me at BU as a player to get to go to a school like that, great academics in an amazing city, and go and be a part of building something at a hockey school nonetheless. I think that was the biggest thing, is you saw the history and tradition of hockey on the men's side. And in my mind, you know, there's no way that that couldn't build on the women's side. And to get to be a part of building that success and tradition and history was really cool. And, you know, it was my sophomore year that we won our first hockey's championship. I was fortunate to be the one that put the puck in the back of the net
nice. In
overtime. And from there, you know, now Marie-Philippe Poulenc joins us, Catherine Ward, Jen Wakefield. And it really, really did springboard pretty quick after that, which was really cool, you know, making it to the national championship the following year. And it just goes to show that it doesn't, if a program's supported, if you really, really invest and build something special, people will come. And it just shows how fast you can grow a program, and pretty cool to, and, you know, humbled to be a part of that.
What's the best college memory you have? I'm assuming it's winning those hockey's championships, because I remember talking to Kaylee Fratkin, and she was saying that you guys were sort of cursed in the beanpot during her time there because you could never find a way to win one. So I'm curious if what were your thoughts on that, and just also winning those championships in Hockey East and making those Frozen Fours as well.
Yeah, we definitely were cursed when it comes to the beanpot. I feel fortunate I got to be there when we did win it as a coach, but it was. I mean, the very first Hockey East championship, I think you look back on that, we were an underdog team. Like, we weren't a high seed going into the tournament, and just to get to be a part of history with that was really, really cool.
How does your college hockey days with Boston University as a player help you as a coach today?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, as a coach is that, and someone that went through what our girls are going through, is that you can anticipate the roadblocks, right? You can, you know, I guess I am getting older, but it wasn't that long ago. So I feel like I can really empathize and anticipate where the struggles are going to be, where the good parts are going to be. And I think that really helps on the coaching side. And then, you know, on the recruiting side, you know, I sat in that chair and I remember how, you know, different coaches made me feel and what was important to me through the recruiting process and what was important to me as a student athlete. And I think all of that just kind of helps you get a sense of what they're looking for and how to provide that environment that I think every high-end, like, competitive young woman wants out of their college experience. So I think just, you know, knowing, having gone through it always helps.
Now, what are some of the roadblocks that college hockey players face once they get on campus that usually you don't expect? And how do you sort of help them get along through that challenge?
Yeah, well, funny enough, what we talked about earlier when we first started talking was the, you know, we referenced culture, but the social stress. I think that's something that's so, so overlooked in college for any freshman. But student athletes are no different, right? Like,
finding your place, where you fit, you know, and it was 9 to 5 for us this year with 18, you know, just wanting to find your place. And so I think that social stress plays a big role. I think you can anticipate a little bit of homesickness around Thanksgiving, if not a little bit sooner. And then I think the stress, you know, when midterms are about to start, you know, when finals come around. So I think you have to empathize. Like, you can't just push through and expect, you know, people to just keep performing and performing. I think you want to, strategically plan your schedule, to kind of roll with those highs and lows and support them, you know, along the way.
Yeah, as a college student myself, I know some of those feelings, not with the athlete side of it, obviously, but just the stress that comes with it and the social circle as well, because when I was a freshman last year, it felt like the whole COVID thing made it even tougher to sort of navigate that.
100%. And it's funny. And I mean, I'm sure like how you can, you know, reflect now, like when you get to be a sophomore and junior, all the trivial things and the stress of being a freshman kind of seems a little bit funny as you get older, but it's real. It's real when you're going through it and just trying to grow up and get comfortable, you know.
Now you won a gold medal. I have to ask about that because I normally don't get the chance to interview a gold medalist. So you're on that 2014 Canadian team. Just talk a little about your Olympic experience and what that was like playing with some legendary players like Poulin and Rebecca Johnson and all those players.
Yeah, I mean, really cool. I was fortunate enough. I guess my Hockey Canada experience started back with the very first U18 team. And when I was 17, it was the very first ever world championship. So that was kind of how I got my first sniff with the program, and it was huge. I got to get a sense of, you know, that high performance environment, what it took to play at that level and get that international experience. And I wanted to go back. That's all I knew, and I had that fire, and I just wanted to continue to make teams, and I was grateful for that experience. And it wasn't until my junior year that I started to make the senior women's team, which is that Olympic team when it comes around every 4 years. And you know, I probably was cut from that team as many times as I made it, and it made the journey that much sweeter. But with regards to the Olympics, I was centralized. I was cut from that world championship roster in 2013, and then I was named to that extended roster of 27 that was going to centralize and move out to Calgary and train and play and prepare for, you know, 9 months leading up to Sochi. And those 9 months leading up to the Olympics, honestly, are the ones that I really come back to. Like, just what we went through as a group, all the challenges, how much I grew, the unique dynamic of, like, preparing to represent your country but still be competing with the person next to you to even get to go. You know, like, that experience completely changed my life, and it's why I do what I do today. You know, I want to create those high-performance environments that challenge and inspire young women, and I was grateful. I was, you know, I was lucky. I got to be one of those players that went on to the Olympics. And to be honest, once you get there, it's pretty much a blur. You know, that preparation that you put in truly allows you to just play. Yeah, I can't tell you a lot of memories from specific games. I can't tell. Yeah. Like, you're almost on autopilot because you're just so prepared. And that feeling was really cool. I can say that, no doubt. And allowed you to be in the moment, being in the village and surrounded by the greater Team Canada, which was a really cool thing, being at the Olympics, but pretty remarkable experience.
Where do you keep the gold medal today?
I keep it in my husband's safe, so it comes out every once in a while, but always fun when it does.
Do you ever show your team that? Well, you got to do it once a year, I feel like, or you just want to sort of be humble about it. I understand that as well.
Yeah, it hasn't, you know, it came out once this year. We had a small group kicking around campus before a Christmas break, and we were just kind of chatting with them in the study lounge, and they brought it up, so I brought it in, but, you know, it hasn't been a full team yet.
Now, after your playing career was finished in pro hockey, I guess what made you want to become a coach? How did that process begin?
Yeah, I always wanted to coach. I think that's, you know, a lot of people, I'm still somewhat young in my coaching career, and a lot of people still see the playing side, you know, a little bit more prominently. But throughout all those years as a player, I knew I wanted to coach, and I feel grateful that I got so many of those amazing experiences at the highest level as a player, because it all made me the coach that I am today. But yeah, I always wanted to be, and, you know, I'm so grateful that it worked out the way that it did. You know, when I retired in 2017 and stopped playing, it was when that BU coaching job opened up, you know, the assistant coaching job. And, you know, I might be skipping ahead here, but this is where that's when, you know, I reached out to Brian, and he took a chance on me as a young coach. And, you know, first year and going in, getting to work at my alma mater, completely changed my life, and I'm just grateful because every year there and getting to start my career just reinforced that it was where I was supposed to be and got to springboard my coaching career pretty quick.
Yeah, let's talk about Brian DeRocher because he recently just retired. And from all the players that played with him, or I guess played for him, say that he always calls you on your birthday, and he's the mayor of Boston. That's what everyone says about him. What's it like working with such a legendary coach like that? And is it different than being a player, being coached by him? Because that's sort of must be a weird relationship when that starts off, being a player with him and now sort of being one of his coworkers.
For sure. And I mean, all of those things I would completely agree with. He's a pretty legendary man and has had a remarkable career building that Boston University program from scratch. But that's it. I mean, I think the coolest part about getting to play for him and work with him is that it was pretty consistent. It really was. And that just speaks to the man and the character that he has. But I think you just see way more of the hard work behind the scenes. You know, when, you know, the players, you know, refer to him as the mayor, it's because he's always around. Like, he's BU through and through. He's a part of that community. He can't walk more than two blocks down Calm Ave without running into someone that knows him. And and I think that's just his passion for being around, right, and being an alum. And I'll never lose sight of that and how important that is in being a coach. And then, you know, I really just learned a lot about his patience, his humility, you know, him wanting to get to know the players and understanding that the little details matter. Like you said, whether it's birthdays or checking in on family or school, and all of that is, people think hockey when they think of coach, but it's so much more than that. And Brian lived that truly.
Yeah. What's it like? Talk about him as a person, because everyone says he's one of the nicest people ever. And I think when most people think about coaches in college hockey, you think of someone that's like yelling at the bench all the time. But he's sort of the complete opposite. He's just calm, cool, and collected, and really nice to his players about trying to help them out. And I feel like that must have helped you as a coach, sort of not just working on the hockey side, but trying to be a good person to your players as well.
Yeah, it just over time, it really does pay off and makes sense, right? Like, the players are the ones that are going out there, they're fired up. To be a consistent presence for them is just, I think, is the most effective way to truly, truly be understood and have your message get across and help guide them over time. And he really was just consistent approach to the game and his players. And would he get passionate and fired up sometimes? Yeah, but I think when he did, it meant more, right? Because it wasn't happening all the time. But I really do think that consistency in his approach was really, really effective.
Now, you helped develop some incredible players during your time with Boston University. You helped coach Jesse Confer, Sammy Davis, and Lacey Martin, just to name a few. And there's obviously a lot more names that I didn't mention. But was there anything that you took away from watching those players and that made you a better coach once you became a head coach? And just talk a little bit about the developments of some of these elite players that you got to work with at BU when you were a coach.
Yeah, that's the coolest part. I think that as a coach getting to work at such a high level with such amazing young athletes is that they make you better every day, right? Getting to work on the skill development side of things, like even just those three players you mentioned, like so different, have different strengths and different mentalities and different approaches to the game. And it's at that point, right? Like, I really feel like at the college level, like, long gone are the days where coaches are coaching at you, right? It's more about working with the players to get the most out of their game and make it the most effective for this level. And so I think you just learn through every experience you get with them, you know, learning how to push them, learning how to make adjustments. All those players, everyone I got to work with at BU, you know, they make you better every day, and it's such a pleasure to be able to work with them.
What's the difference between Sammy Davis and Jesse Confer offensively? Because I feel like they have very similar shots, and the way they skate is very similar as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you can look at Jesse, I know, can play the wing too, but played center for us a lot when we were there. So Sammy being a lot of that power forward type of mentality, and Sammy is like, go, go, go. They both have that same compete level, but in a subtly different way. You know, Jesse playing the middle lent to a little bit of a different style of game. But I think both of them were so effective. They're both very, very different people and fun to watch, but brought that same level of compete, which was really cool.
Now, in 2021, you were hired as the head coach of Stonehill. How did this opportunity come about, and what have the past 2 years been like for yourself in this position?
Yeah, you know, I reflect on, I can't believe it's been 2 years now that I think about it, but, you know, it was really hard to ever think about leaving BU. You know, when you get to start at your alma mater, it's pretty special, but, you know, I did. I always wanted to be a head coach, and, you know, when the Stonehill job opened up just 30 minutes down the road, you know, it's hard not to, you know, hard not for that to pique your interest. So, you know, I looked into it and got a sense of what was going on, and obviously the location caught my eye and the opportunity to grow in my coaching, you know, career. But I think what really, really kept drawing me in was that opportunity to build a program from scratch. You know, I think a lot of people look at that potentially as a daunting task, but I think there's pros and cons, right? Like, I got a year as a young coach to get my feet wet on campus, to get a sense of the community, to recruit the girls. And I felt like there was a great opportunity out there. So, you know, from the moment I stepped on campus, I saw the beautiful campus here, the great academics, the support the team would have, and it was a no-brainer.
What was, like, some of the biggest challenges of starting a new program that you had to face, and how'd you go about them?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was we're a small school, and we were a D2 school when I first took the job, and we were going to be the only D1 team on campus joining the Neuha. And that provided a lot of excitement and a great opportunity. But at the same time, being at a smaller school is just a little bit smaller, right? A little bit less of, a little bit less people in the department and things like that. But the school actually ended up transitioning to D1 midway through our first year of recruiting. And that created a little bit of a challenge in terms of just now every team on campus is looking to grow, right? So it just created a little bit of that uncertainty. But I think long-term, so excited for the college, right? Like, it just shows that investment in athletics moving forward. So I think it was create a little bit of uncertainty in the moment of our build, and for a brand-new program that needed a lot of love and attention, it created some of that uncertainty. But like I said, I think long-term is the right move, no doubt. But I think if I were to reflect back, you know, a lot of, yeah, just 22 new players in a room and trying to build that culture provides its own sense of challenges. But it really was. It was a great year. And, I mean, I'm just so proud of how the girls played and how they represented the program.
Well, there was one year where you didn't play any games at all, so I assume you guys were out recruiting. Just talk a little bit about that year when you weren't playing games and just going through the recruiting process as a head coach.
Yeah, I was lucky that I was able to bring on Megan Myers, one of our assistant coaches, in that first year. So I didn't have to do it alone. So that was a really cool part, getting to have her. So it was me and her, kind of recruiting was a massive part of it. We were on the road almost every weekend. I felt like there was a unique opportunity with COVID and, you know, the D1 rosters being really, really packed with that extra year. So, you know, I really felt that there was a great opportunity out there and a lot of great players still out there. So we hit the road a lot, and recruiting was a huge piece of it. And then the other part was, you know, that just getting involved in the community, getting a sense of what it's like here, starting to build up some of the infrastructure around what the girls were going to need with the locker room, designing our jerseys, like all the little things that you don't think about. But we got to have a hand in doing all of that, which was really cool.
I love your jerseys. I'm a big fan of purple. I feel like if it's done right, it's one of the best. Like, I think Holy Cross has some of the best road jerseys in Hockey East, and I really like your – I think you have the best jerseys in Neuha.
Thank you. I'll have to let Megan know. She'll be happy to hear that. I'm a big fan, too. The purples are awesome.
Was it an adjustment becoming a head coach versus an assistant? I'm assuming you have similar responsibilities, but it must be sort of an adjustment being the main person, that the face of the program when you're an assistant. You're not really that.
For sure. Yeah, it's like, I mean, hockey's hockey, like you said, but there is a big difference. And one that I always laugh about is that problems all get brought to you. I think sometimes as an assistant coach, you know, you don't always see all the little things going on, but a lot of little things just get brought to you, and just filtering through, you know, what needs your immediate attention, what doesn't, what to be patient with. So I think that's a funny one that I reflect on. But I think the coolest part about it is that you get to build a culture with your staff and then your players, and really delegating and investing in your coaching staff around you, your extended staff amongst the department, and getting to help lead that group. And I think that was obviously what was new for me as a head coach, but what I was really excited about, because I truly don't feel like if you don't create the culture within your staff that you want from your players, then everything else doesn't matter. So it's kind of starting there and then building out from there. So that part was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's something I learned as well. Is someone was saying that like you also want your players to coach you sometimes as well, because sometimes coaches aren't perfect, so you sort of need that balance effect where your players are sort of willing to come and like ask you questions and sort of learn from each other, which I think is something that's starting to become more talked about, at least in the coaching aspect of hockey.
100%, it is, and that like we were talking about before, you know. Long gone are the days where you're coaching at them. You know, it's an iterative process where it's like we're here to work together to help you achieve your dreams and the team's goals.
Now talk about what it's like coaching in Newhall, because it seems like the conference has gotten a lot better over the years. You saw that this year with teams beating ECHC teams and Hockey East teams this year in out-of-conference games, and obviously with LIU being the first team ever to make it to the national tournament. So just talk about what it's like coaching in that conference and the growth of it as well.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for women's hockey. I think it was about time. It was about time for there to be more Division I homes for girls to play in. And, you know, and it's going to take time for our conference to continue to develop and build up those resources from program to program. But it was really cool. And the game has come a long way. There are competitive games, no doubt. You know, you saw upsets even within our conference. But it was such an exciting year for our conference too, with the first year having the automatic bid to the national tournament. You know, something was on the line, and I think that that is just going to help our league continue to grow too, with that excitement of getting to be a part of that national tournament.
Now this past season, your team had a really solid year, surprising I think a lot of people, making the Newhall semifinals. What were some positive things that you took away from last season, and what are some things I guess you want your team to improve on for next year?
Yeah, having time to reflect now a little bit, you know, a lot of people would always ask me, like, well, how do you think you're going to do? Like, are you exceeding expectations? And I didn't really know in the moment. You know, you're just trying to get better every weekend. But if I were to reflect on it, you know, I always thought that we could build something competitive, you know, at least try to peak during playoffs and try to, you know, I always thought we could at least put something competitive on the ice and maybe make a run. But I didn't anticipate putting together the body of work that our girls did. And that's a testament to them. They're Division I college hockey players. They deserve to be here. And they put together a pretty remarkable season in terms of just their body of work, whether it's at a conference or in conference, and really proud of what they did. And I think just continuing to grow next season, I think a little bit more confidence, a little bit more finesse to our offensive game, and a little bit more consistency and composure. I think the physicality our girls learned is a big part of it, and building that strength is going to be a big focus for the off season and just being ready to go.
Yeah, do you think that confidence and like learning that physicality and the players just getting better during the off season will help you build your consistency during regular season? Because it felt like your team had a really good start, but then towards the middle of the year, it's sort of like you were on that losing streak and then sort of figured it out towards the end. How do you sort of try to get that consistency throughout the beginning of the regular season towards the end?
Yeah, and we really started to dial in on it, like getting towards the postseason. And I really believe that it has to do with our how we communicate. We really focused on our standards and our mentality and how we want to approach the game, and, you know, not responding or getting too high or too low depending on whether it's a penalty, a goal, or whatever it is. And I can really say that they bought in, and we were building that and laid a strong foundation down the stretch. So I think it's just making sure that we pull those lessons with us and continue to grow as a group.
Now, we already talked about some of your roster moves that you are going to make for next season, but I love the out-of-conference schedule. It's something that I'm always interested in. Can you share some of your non-conference games if you're allowed to do that for next season, or are you still in the process of making it all work?
We are. We're still in the process of solidifying it. You know, I think the big thing is we have a sense of what it's going to look like, and it should be exciting, so keep an eye out. But just finalizing those contracts and making sure they're confirmed before going public with it. But keep an eye out. The out-of-conference schedule will be a lot of fun.
Awesome, awesome. That's something that I think needs to get better in women's hockey. I'm curious your thoughts on that, because you only get 7 games, and I feel like it should be like the men's season where you get 10, because I feel like it leads for more teams to play against each other that normally don't get to play each other. And I think that's just better for the sport in general.
100%. And I think, you know, now that women's hockey's growing, the operating budgets are growing, right, to be able to go out west or wherever it is, and it is, it's exciting for the game. I think our league is going to be at a unique place with the addition of Assumption, of figuring out now we have a little bit less of an opportunity for those out-of-conference games, so figuring out whether maybe we go down to 3 games versus each other and create that room for at-of-conference, but I think we'll be at that tipping point as we move forward.
I do want to ask you a couple of questions about the U18 Canadian team, because you coached the last two teams that won gold medals. What was it like coaching those players in the under-18 level? Because it's probably a little bit different than college hockey just because they're not as mature. And just talk a little bit about, like, taking a break in the middle of the season just to do that, because that sort of must be sort of a challenge as a coach to be focused on Stonehill and then sort of in the middle of the year to focus on Team Canada. And what was it like getting those gold medals and helping those girls achieve those memories that will probably last a lifetime, playing in Wisconsin and playing in Sweden?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, creating memories that will last a lifetime. It's, I mean, getting to be a part of Hockey Canada in any capacity is always a dream come true, and I learn so much every time I get to go, and both experiences were amazing. And the way that it works is that you kind of start in August in the summer, and you have that summer camp, three-game series, and then the Worlds are usually, not the COVID year, are in January. So you kind of have those two touch points. But, I mean, a lot of preparation goes into it virtually as you lead up to the tournament as well. So it was tough to leave mid-season, but I think it was so cool and humbling in a lot of ways that, you know, Megan and Lauren did great when I was gone. So really, really investing in our staff to make sure that they knew the game plan. And, you know, then it was hands off. Like, they were ready. They were going to be ready to be able to give the group what it needed. And they are three for four when I was gone. So a testament to them. But, when you're in there, it's just, you really feel like you're in a bubble of just everyone that's so passionate to get to represent their country uniquely, even though they're younger. With having such a young group at Stonehill, it was somewhat similar in age. But they're just so good. And to get to work with such talented athletes that are so passionate, they're representing their country for the first time. You get to watch them put the jersey on for the first time. Like, that's such a special experience. And it really is just bringing that calmness, getting them all on the same page and just letting them play. And two pretty special groups I got to be a part of.
Yeah, and the two different tournaments too, because obviously the first one was sort of weird with the whole COVID situation, sort of like canceling it, then rescheduling it, and then having it in June. And then this one seemed a little bit more normal. So how'd you sort of navigate the challenges of the first one? I'm just curious about that, because that must have been hard to tell the players, like, there's not going to be a tournament, because that's something that they've probably been dreaming about their whole lives. And then sort of being like, hey, it's back and you got to go to the camp and do all that stuff.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind, and it was tough. Yeah, because we selected that roster, we were preparing, and then it was canceled, and then it was back. And I think what made that experience unique for us in Madison was that we did our tryout, so it just extended the entire pre-Worlds competition. So, I mean, we're talking about girls that have been not playing in big tournaments for their childhood, and now you're pulling them away from their family for almost over a month. So I think it was tough on them, you know, especially during their graduation from high school and their prom and all that kind of stuff. So it provided some unique challenges there in terms of just the length of our pre-comp that we had to have going into Madison. And for them to experience that high performance environment, not having gotten it from their provincial programs, which they normally do. So it was definitely unique in that way, and the timing of the year that we had that tournament. But yeah, like you said, and then the second one being a little bit more traditional.
Yeah. And it seems like that those tournaments are getting so much better. Like, you're seeing it not, it used to be just USA and Canada, but you see those other countries are now really competing with you guys, which I think is good to see. And then obviously, like, I think they're now broadcasting it more, which I think is another good thing, because I'm getting to learn about these players that I would have no idea about before they head into college hockey. And I want to ask you about two of them, really. One that stood out to me last year was Brooke Disher. She's now playing for BU as a defender. What was it like coaching her, and just talk about how she's grown as a defender? Because she, in my opinion, she did a great job as a captain for that team, but it's also been awesome to see sort of how she's gotten better with BU, and you recruited her as well. So that's sort of something I want to ask you about as well.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure getting to work with Brooke. You know, like you said, having recruited her to BU, and she's just such a class act and so mature for her age. And you think about wearing the captain for your country and doing it when you're 17 years old, like, there is so much pressure there. And I just feel like she did it with so much grace and humility and composure. And it wasn't an easy tournament for that team, and to be able to bounce back and face some adversity and stick together as a group, I just have so much respect for her. And to me, she's just a gamer. She's got a great skill set. Obviously, she can skate 200 feet. She likes to get up in the rush. she's a 2023 style defenseman. And I think that's the cool part about her game. And I don't think you can teach that zero hesitation that she has, right? Like wanting to be involved, wanting to be in the mix. And she definitely has a really exciting future ahead.
And then another player that stood out to me was Alex Law from last year. What really made me stood out for her was during the first tournament that she played in, she really was sort of a bottom six forward. And then this past year, she exploded to be one of the best offensive players on the team. And even though she missed the game, I think she was second on the team in points. So talk about the growth that she made from the first tournament to the last, because that was something that really piqued my interest as a fan of just women's hockey and seeing the growth of these players.
Yeah, and I think that just speaks to, like, what experience does for you at that age, right? Like, the tournament wasn't that long ago, but our whole leadership group and our group of returners, with Alex included in that group, like, really brought an amazing leadership component to our group in Sweden, and it was so fun to watch her have a breakout tournament. I mean, she's just so dynamic and skilled with her hands and able to just create time and space for herself. She is one of the most passionate people I know that just brings energy to a room. You know, she just really thrived in that environment, and it was a pleasure working with her and watching her have that breakout tournament.
Now, I do need to ask you about a couple players on your Stonehill team, because that would be I would be wrong if I only talked about Team Canada players. So first one was Alexis Petford, one of the best rookies in Neuha this year. How did you find her, first of all, in the recruiting process, and talk about just how good of a freshman year she had and just the adjustment that she made so quickly?
Yeah, girl from Saskatchewan, Canada. I made a few trips out there, to say the least. But, no, she did actually come out this way for the Beantown tournament in the summer and had reached out and caught my attention right away. You know, I went to go see her play there. And what I loved about her game is that it can come off subtle, especially in those showcase-style tournaments. But it just took one shot for me to see her and be like, that girl can score goals. And I think a very similar thing to just her compete and tenacity. I think, like, she wants the puck on her stick. She wants to be in the mix, and she has great instincts, and she's a hockey player. And so that was the first time when she came out this way. And then I made a couple trips out to Saskatchewan as well, and got to see her play in for her provincial camp and things like that. And grateful that she wanted to take a chance on me with this.
Then another player that I really liked a lot last year was Brianna Wacom, a sort of an underrated player on your team. But when you talk about players that sort of fit the culture that you're looking for, I feel like Brianna is a big example of that, because interviewing her like last year, you can just sort of tell how excited she was to join the program, sort of help you guys out. And she was also telling me that she had to take a gap year, which you normally don't see in women's college hockey. So talk about how you got her to the program and just what she's meant to the program as well, because she's been, like I said, one of the more underrated players in Neuha this year.
100%. We are so lucky to have Bree. Just what a class act. And I think it does show, I mean, the difference between one year, like having that extra gap year, just that maturity and professionalism that Bree brings to the table every day. It still blows my mind. You know, we were so lucky to have her. She's unanimous by her teammates in terms of someone that really elevated herself as a leader, and that just really adds to our team's culture and identity. And we're so lucky to have Bree. And she was crucial for us on the PK. She played down the middle for us, giving us a really, really good, consistent presence. And I don't know if you could find one person that wouldn't agree with all of us on that. So Bree was a great addition to the program.
So we're now in a segment I like to call the non-hockey segment, where I ask you some non-hockey questions just to get to know you a little bit more. First one is, what music do you like to listen to?
I'm pretty boring. I'm a country girl. I like to keep it consistent, but yeah.
Do you listen to the same country music as your players, or is it a little bit more like different than they do?
I probably would listen to Chris Stapleton more than they do. They're definitely into Morgan Wallen, I know, which I'll still listen to, but I like Chris Stapleton. A lot would be more Raylene.
Favorite TV show?
How I Met Your Mother.
I've actually never seen an episode of that. I need to start watching more TV. I'm too into baseball and hockey. I never get time to like binge on a show.
I hear you, and I'm not good at, like, that's an older one. I'd highly recommend it, but it takes a lot for me to get into a new series. Although Ted Lasso also would be up there.
Yeah, I feel like every coach loves that show. If you could have lunch with anyone in the world, who would it be and why?
That is a tough one.
I guess I'll go with my answer. I'll do I'll do for hockey, probably like Wayne Gretzky, just because like he's dominated so much. And I'll just be curious to hear like what he has to say about like how he like sort of just playing that old school type of way. But like, I just think it's crazy how he got all these points. Like I never saw him play, but it just sort of baffles my mind like how good he was. So sort of talk to him about his career and what he thinks about the growth of hockey.
Yeah, that's a great point. I guess I could build up that. I mean, Bobby Orr, like, just such a unique and what he did for the game and before his time, no doubt. So that'd be pretty cool.
What is the most interesting thing you've read or seen this week?
That is a great question.
I'll go with mine first so you can think about it. But kind of piggybacking off Bobby Orr, I didn't realize how he that sort of got screwed over by his agent. He was going to sign with the Bruins. And have like 18% of ownership with the team. And I guess his agent never told him about that. And he signed with Chicago instead. And now he lost like so much money because of it. And it sort of led him to be an agent where he is today. So I thought that was pretty cool. I never knew that story.
Wow. I guess I'll be boring and I'll go with just all my players and answers in our individual meeting following the season. That kept me on our toes. That kept us on our toes and a lot of fun to debrief the year.
That's good. That's good. And then last non-hockey question is your favorite class you ever took in college?
I would say in undergrad, epidemiology. I was I studied health science. So just that study of disease and, how the environment affects it was really cool.
It's probably paid dividends, especially the last few years with everything going on.
Crazy to think about, but true, no doubt.
Now back to some hockey questions now. First one is, what advice would you give a younger player that's listening to this podcast on what it takes to make it to the college hockey level where you were and where your players are now?
Yeah, I really think what gets lost now is being an athlete first, as long as you can. I think the recruiting landscape being so young there and just other factors. But, girls are just specializing in hockey way too young. And the longer you can be an athlete and play multiple sports, your ceiling's just going to be so, so much higher. You don't have to skate 12 months out of the year. Take a break, get in the gym, play a different sport. That's just going to allow you to grow that much more. I would say just keep trying to find programs and teams where – you feel connected to the group. You feel like your coach can help develop you. And I think a lot of times we kind of chase teams that we think are going to be in these showcases or these tournaments. But as long as you're working to develop every year, I think your career will play out. I really feel bad that with the women's hockey landscape being the way that it is right now, professional hockey is growing and we're hopeful, but I feel like girls feel the pressure to have success at such a young age, right? Like if I'm not going to college, then I'm not going anywhere. But you have control over your career. It can be a very long one. You don't have to have all the success by the age of 17. Keep pushing through and getting better, and it will work out.
What should be done to help grow women's hockey, in your opinion? I think mostly for the college side of things, because I think a lot of people can agree that the program is really where women's hockey is going to grow. And I had the chance to talk to Chris McKenzie from UConn. He told me, saying pretty much, he says, once the pro game means more the Olympics, that's when women's hockey is going to skyrocket. So I feel like a lot of coaches agree on that. But from a college hockey perspective, what are some changes you want to see in women's college hockey that you think will help grow more viewers, I guess, to watch the sport?
Yeah, I think we're getting there, no doubt. Having that coverage, I know ESPN has really stepped in and been a consistent platform now for a lot of the leagues to be showed on. I think keep growing the NCAA tournament. I think if we can keep growing the tournament, we're up to 11 teams now. But whether it's regional sites or, getting a little bit closer to what the men do, we might not be ready for that yet. But I think the more that we can continue to grow the game, I look at schools in Michigan, you look at think there's a lot of homes that could be out there too. So, it's an exciting time for women's hockey. And I think there's some different things that could go on to help it grow.
Just in Massachusetts alone, the official University of Massachusetts, UMass, doesn't have a women's hockey team, which I always find sort of funny how the state school doesn't have a women's hockey team in arguably one of the biggest hockey states in the U.S.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So I think one more question is, I want to see Frozen Fours be played in sort of non-campus sites, which is sort of a unique opinion for me. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the benefit of having, a predetermined regional site and then, maybe a bigger venue for, the final Frozen Four, like the the benefit along that line of a regional site being predetermined is that you can really promote it all year, right? Instead of waiting to see who the top seed is, who's going to host it. And then, you know, you build some excitement there, and then, you know, you go to a little bit of a bigger venue. I think the product is there. And the benefit of that is people want the experience, right? As much as people are going to watch the hockey, like to go to a really cool venue, to go to, you know, whether it's TD Garden or whatever it is, right? I think if you generate enough excitement and invest enough money into the marketing and promotion side of things too, and you put it in a good location for hockey, I think that the venue is going to excite people almost just as much as the product's going to. And it, like, to create that atmosphere, right, where people feel part of something bigger, I think could really excite the, you know, the Frozen Four.
Yeah, because I saw that the Beanpot's going to TD Garden, which I think is great news. And I just feel like, you know, the places that they've had the Frozen Four, it's like hard for fans to get to because they're really not near major airports and they're sort of in places where they're hard to get to. And I feel like if you put it in like a Boston or I don't know what other places, like Minneapolis, like places like AHL rinks or NHL rinks where they're near like airports where people can go see. I just feel like it would grow the sport more where it's not super regionalized in these campus sites where the Frozen Four is. That's sort of my opinion on that.
I don't think that's a bad one at all, no doubt.
Well, Tara, do you have any shout-outs you want to give to any of your, I guess, current players, former teammates, coaches, family members? Feel free to do that. The floor is all yours.
Shout out to the family, of course, mom and dad, my niece, Kennedy, nephew, Colson, what a group. And then, you know, I guess just shout out to my staff all the way through, Megan, Lauren, Pete, Chris, James, Chrissy. Wouldn't have been able to do it without any of you this year, and feel very grateful.
Thank you so much, Tara, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. It means so much to myself, and I wish you and your team nothing but the best moving forward. I know you're going to do great things as the new head coach of Boston University. So looking forward to covering you guys soon, and take care.
You, I've been trying hard to keep my cool, but when you're near, there's nothing that I can do. When you're walking in, I know it's true. Doesn't even matter how hard I try, 'cause when I hear your voice, my wall